On this tax day edition of On Your Money, financial planner Kevin McKinley will discuss what we should do in times of tax turmoil, and he'll have other information and advice related to tax day. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and as always, answers to your personal finance questions, whatever they may be, at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Kevin McKinley is a financial planner and managing member of McKinley Money, LLC, and he joins us from our studios in Eau Claire. Hello, Kevin.
Hello, Joy.
So, Kevin, it's almost time to file our taxes, and today we are going to talk about several items related to the tax filing deadline, and there is actually some good news for anyone who hasn't filed yet.
Yes, good news for all of you procrastinators out there. The tax filing deadline in 2016 for the 2015 tax year is not April 15th, which is this Friday. It's April 18th. The coming Monday. And the reason being is that there is a law that if there is a holiday, a federal holiday, on the tax filing day, then it's moved to the 18th. And this year, Emancipation Day, which is a holiday in the District of Columbia, falls on the 16th, which then says that the filing date should be the 18th. I don't quite understand it, but I'm sure people who are scrambling to get their taxes done definitely not only appreciate the extra couple days, but a weekend to do it. You not only have the 18th and to get your taxes done, but you can also, that's the deadline to get contributions done, as we mentioned last week, about trying to get Roth IRA, IRAs, HSAs, and EdVest contributions in as well.
Yeah, and of course, there is a rule that if you are a procrastinator, you will wait until the 18th to
do it. Of course. You've known about it. You've had your information for several weeks, But no one said, well, I'm still going to use the 15th as my deadline, so I have plenty of time to get them in.
Let's start with how much we are paying in taxes.
Well, on a federal tax base, it's not too bad for most people. The median household income in America right now is about $60,000. And for that household, they will pay about $7,400 in federal income taxes each year. And it works out to about 11% of their gross income. And only about 60% of households actually pay federal taxes in a given year. Usually it's because they don't pay because they don't have enough income, or they receive credits or losses enough to offset whatever their liability would be. Now, those people do often pay property taxes, sales taxes, state taxes, and Social Security taxes as well. So just because they're not paying federal taxes doesn't mean they are paying no taxes at all. And in case you're wondering who's footing the bill, about 1% of taxpayers pay almost half of the federal income tax bill, according to the Tax Policy Center.
So where do our tax dollars go?
Yeah, on a federal level, you might be surprised. According to the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities, about 27 cents of your tax federal income tax dollar go to the military. Another similar dollar amount goes to medical and health care spending. About 15 cents of that dollar goes to interest, and Social Security disability is about 8 cents, and then veterans benefits and retirement benefits for other public employees are about 6%. So a lot of times you hear about, we're going to cut things in the federal government, we're going to cut spending, we're spending too much. That certainly could be the case, but if you're really going to whack the federal spending budget, you have to go at some things that are very difficult to cut and some people don't like the military and medical care, and it's very difficult, even in this time of low interest rates, to cut the interest on what you pay on the debt. And if we see higher interest rates, obviously the interest we pay on the debt will become a much bigger share of where our federal tax dollars go.
And how well will the IRS be able to help us during this really busy time?
Yeah, there's some good news and some bad news. The good news is the IRS is obviously trying to make things more efficient by putting more information online, more tools, et cetera. And we'll talk about some of those during the day here. But there are less people available to help you. There's been a 14% drop in IRS employee count since 2010. And it's because the budget cuts, there's been a 17% cut since 2010. And once that's been adjusted for inflation. The good news about that is there's been a 23% drop in enforcement staff since that same time, so you're less likely to be audited. But the IRS, in an effort to try to serve the taxpayers better, has a suggestion box with a contest. If you go to irs.gov, you'll see that they have a little contest called How to Build Taxpayer Experience of the Future. And you can submit your suggestions on how to make things easier or more efficient. And if you win, there's a $10,000 grand prize. And then there are several other subcategories that award $2,000 prizes. So if you're going through the tax process and you think of a way that things might work a little better, send it into the IRS and maybe you'll get some prize money. Of course, that's before taxes are withheld.
Wait a minute. So the suggestion box is how to improve the taxpayer experience? Is that
yes,
what it is?
Yes, taxpayer experience, right.
All right, all right. Well, maybe listeners have a suggestion on how to improve the taxpayer experience during this taxing edition of On Your Money. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Kevin McKinley is the managing member of McKinley Money LLC, a registered investment advisor with offices in Eau Claire and Madison. Kevin does not intend to provide personalized investment advice through this broadcast and does not represent that the securities or services discussed are suitable for any investor. Investors should consult with their financial advisors prior to making any investment decisions. And with that, let's take our first caller, Darwin in Milwaukee. Hi, Darwin.
Oh, hello. Hey, Joy, Kevin, my concern is not about taxes.
That's okay.
I'm sorry. Hey, I'm trying to determine if I need to establish a trust or if I can just use my will to transfer my assets to my beneficiary. I only have one beneficiary, that's my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And my will names her for all of my assets, which are CDs, IRAs, and CDs, annuities, and then my home.
Mm-hmm.
And she's the beneficiary, and she's named. And the CDs and annuities, they approximate about $1 million, and the home value about $250,000. And the attorney I know suggests that I use a trust. And my question is, do I really need one with the will, which names my daughter, go from there? I don't think so, but...
Well, it's kind of a belt and suspenders approach, Darwin. And I'm not an attorney, but I know several attorneys. And they would probably tell you, the good ones would tell you, that it's a good idea to have a living trust, especially for someone who is a little older and has significant assets and may have some complications in terms of avoiding probate with those assets. Even when you have just one beneficiary, some other people can come out of the woodwork and say, hey, Uncle Darwin promised me that I would get the house, not his daughter. And the living trust can help avoid that. It is a little bit more expensive to set up. And even when you do establish a living trust, you still should probably have a will as kind of a backup plan in there. And so I would suggest have you worked with the attorney before?
No.
Okay.
I play poker with him.
Okay.
Good.
Do you usually win, Darwin, or does he usually win?
No, I kind of break even.
You break even? Okay, because if you won a lot, he may be looking for a way just to get some of his money back for it. But no, I don't think there's anything wrong with setting up a living trust at all, again, especially when you have a larger estate to deal with. And one thing that the legal work can help do in terms of setting up some kind of trust is that we do not go through life fully functional, usually, up until the day we die. Usually there's a cognitive decline. And when that happens, a lot of times you're not able to manage your assets in a way that you would like them to be managed. And so setting up the legal documents now so that your daughter can take over if you are not able to do it or don't even want to do it, that's where I think the legal work could really come in handy versus deciding if you should have a will or a living trust. So I'd like you to set up things so that if something should happen to you where you're alive, but you're not quite able to take care of things, that your daughter or someone else you trust could take over management of your affairs.
Well, that's very interesting.
Good.
Yeah, that's the first time that's happened on this show.
How did that happen?
No one's ever called this very interesting.
Good luck to you, Darwin. Thanks for the call, and good luck with the poker game, too. Laura emails, I cashed in about $10,000 in stocks. I want to reinvest. I've already contributed the maximum amount to my Roth IRA for 2016. Any other suggestions?
Okay, well, assuming Laura is really correct for the 2016 tax year, she may be meaning the 2015 tax year.
Yeah.
If not, you can actually make a contribution to the your IRA or Roth IRA for the 2016 tax year already. January 1st is the first date in which you can do that. You may also, Laura, just want to use some of that money to set up a little rainy day fund. And then also, you can invest, of course, in yourself. And it doesn't have to be in an IRA or Roth IRA. So I'd like to see you use that to make sure you have at least 3 months and hopefully 6 months worth of living expenses set aside so that if something happens to you or your income stream, you've got some money there to tide you over until you get back on your feet. So add up your monthly expenses and take at least 3 times that figure and hopefully 6 times that figure and just put that in a checking account, savings account, or short-term CD, money market account, so it doesn't have any market risk to it and it's there if you need it. And then after that, if you have enough money set aside, you may want to look at some kind of investment of the longer term. I'd suggest a low-cost index mutual fund if you're going, if you haven't done that before. Vanguard is probably the most prominent provider, but other companies do offer low-cost mutual funds as well.
If you have a question for financial planner Kevin McKinley, you can email a question to onyourmoney@wpr.org, or you can call us at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley. Kevin is a financial planner and managing member of McKinley Money LLC. We'll get to more of your questions in just a moment. I'm Joy Cardine. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tax Day falls on April 18th this year, which gives taxpayers a few extra days to get everything filed and taken care of. But we are addressing some issues when it comes to Tax Day, what to do in times of tax turmoil. Kevin McKinley is here answering your questions, not just your tax-related questions, your personal finance questions of any kind at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Kevin, a lot of our younger listeners have asked if it's smarter to contribute to an IRA or Roth IRA right now or use the money to pay down debt. Which would you advise?
Yeah, it depends on several factors. And usually the people I think who've been asking this question are usually asking about student loans, as they just feel so burdened by the payments and the interest that they just would, that seems like a much more urgent need for the money than something like a retirement account, which technically they're not going to need for hopefully 30 or 40 more years. So I get that. It depends on the interest rate on the debt, and it also depends on the tax rate at which people would save if they were putting money into a pre-tax account like an IRA. You know, you're going to save anywhere from 10 to 40 cents on your income taxes if you make a pre-tax contribution to an IRA or a 401k or something like that. It also depends on the future investment gains. You know, the more money you're likely to make over the future, the better off it is to get it set aside in the savings. And then finally, if you know, what if you do pay down that debt? Let's say you have a credit card balance that's really bugging you and it's $5,000. Let's say you pay that balance down with the $5,000 instead of putting it into an IRA or a Roth IRA. Well, if you trust yourself enough to not charge it back up again, that can be a good place to put the money. But if you think you're just going to charge it back up to the ceiling, sometimes having that a very little credit room will keep you from making purchases that you would otherwise want to avoid.
Are there some rules of thumbs when it comes to this?
Yep. The lower your income is and the higher the interest rate is on the debt, the better off it is to pay off the debt. And by lower income, I mean less than $50,000 for a single filer of gross income and about $100,000 for married couples filing jointly. Again, anything under that amount, it's usually better off to actually pay the debt off than it is to put into some kind of retirement savings account, especially if it's a Roth IRA, because, again, you don't get a tax break on the deposit like you do with an IRA or a 401k or 403b deposit. But if the debt is credit card debt, if it's student loans, anything basically, if you're paying over about 6% interest on it, then you're probably better sliding that money over, applying it to the principal of the balance, and then reducing not only hopefully your payments, but the amount of interest you pay. And then that's a good idea unless there are just two basic factors that come into play.
What are those factors?
Well, if that paying off that debt is going to use up all of your liquid savings, then don't do it. You're better off putting the money into a Roth IRA because, again, you don't get much of a tax break at all. You might apply for the saver's credit and get a little bit back on that. But you can pull the contributions to a Roth IRA out at any time for any reason, with no taxes or penalties whatsoever. So you can have that be kind of your emergency slush fund. And again, if you're afraid that you're going to pay off the balance and then charge it back up, you might want to just say, well, I'm going to save for retirement, keep making the minimum payments, and then hopefully that artificial limit on my credit card spending will keep me from charging it up again.
This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine with financial planner Kevin McKinley. Kevin is here just about every week at this time with information and advice on your money. If you have a question for him, you can call now at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Jeff in Baraboo is with us now. Hello, Jeff.
Yes, good morning. Say, my wonderful son's graduating from high school here, from college here soon, and this past weekend I found out that he ran up a substantial amount of credit card debt while he was in school. Mm-hmm. And he's talking about, my wife and I could pay that off pretty, I mean, it's a lot, but we could pay it off without any real hit to us. But I don't think he'd learn much from that. And he's talking about filing bankruptcy. And I suggested he contact one of these credit card services that actually helps negotiate with your creditors and reduce how much you owe. But I'm curious, Kevin, as to which one, you know, I'm trying to explain this to my son, which one would he suffer a bigger hit on his credit report, you know, are those credit services that help negotiate with the creditors, are they a good idea, or is it better off for this kid to just start with a clean slate, I guess? I don't know.
Well, I'd actually prefer neither one of those, especially since you mentioned, Jeff, that you may be able to pay it off or at least make the payments for it. Neither one will help his credit, especially not the bankruptcy. That will clobber him. And one of the reasons why I'm concerned about it, I'm all about, you know, teaching lessons and doling out a little tough love when it comes to making mistakes. And he's a kid still, and he gets to make mistakes like we all do. But that can really haunt him. Either one of those things can haunt him, not just when he's going to apply for a new loan, but also when he applies for to rent an apartment. Auto insurance and homeowners insurance premiums can be affected by his credit rating and those bankruptcies and the credit negotiation. And then even his employment can be affected by it as well. I think about a third of large employers do some kind of credit screening for their employees, because a lot of times they're in a job that requires handling sensitive information. People, the employers are worried, or the insurers of the employers are worried, that people who are in money trouble are going to abuse access to financial information of the company's customers. So, do you have a rough idea of what the balance is, Jeff?
Yeah, he's just under probably $40,000.
Okay, yeah, that's a pretty significant amount. I would do one of two things. If you can pay it off, I would pay it off. I would cap his, I would freeze his credit report so he couldn't open up any new cards. And then I would have, you can just say, hey, this is your gift for your ignorance. We love you. We can do this. And so we're going to do this. Or you can say, we're going to have you start paying us back that amount. And we're going to set up a real live loan where you are going to feel the damage of this, but it's not going to affect your credit score as badly, because we're going to do the loan between us. And then you can just make payments on this, and he can make, $500 a month payments for probably about 4 or 5 years to you to pay that balance off. And then, of course, you get the option, if he gets his head on straight, doesn't charge anything else up, you get the option of forgiving those payments. And so that's the way I would have it. I would have you do it. I'd rather have you just at least set up a loan initially, and then have the notion that if you want to forgive the payments, you can do it at any given time. Or you could do this. If you want to help him out but not give him that amount of money, you can just make the minimum payments yourself for whatever he can, so that he can keep it current and try to whittle that debt down on his own. But at the interest rates, I'm guessing he's probably paying between 10% and 20% on average on that credit card balance. Unless he's got a really great income, that's going to be very difficult to pay off on his own right now. And the bankruptcy is that's the last resort option, and even the credit card negotiation, but they might shave some off the principal balance, but it's not going to be a lot. And what they're going to do is he's going to end up in the same situation of trying to pay the creditors off as he's trying to pay you off. So if you're willing to do it and you can do it, that would be my suggestion.
All right, thank you so much. I appreciate it. We can. I just, those other options for making him more responsible will be helpful when we, I just didn't want to hand him the money. So thank
you. I hear you, Jeff. That's a good, that's a good balance.
Yeah, thank you, Jeff, and good luck to all of you. David in Jefferson is with us now. Hi, David.
Hi. Hi. I filed an extension 4 years in a row, and I think just out of complete laziness, I'm getting money back for each of the years. I'm now hearing that I might not be eligible for the first year that I didn't file was in 2011, that return, the money that is getting returned to me, I am not eligible for.
Is it because the window kind of expired? Is that what they're telling you?
That's, I've read online, a 3-year window. I wasn't aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, for lack of better terms, does that mean I'm screwed on 2011?
Yes.
That's a sophisticated financial term, David, that that we try to use, but I try to not use it because some people don't understand the jargon. And so, but yes, there is a window. It's one reason, we're going to talk about this in a little while, it's one reason that people should file taxes anyway, but I think of something like 7 million people should file taxes and don't file them every single year. But this is one reason. If you got a refund coming, you only get a limited amount of time in which you can actually get that refund. And I believe you're correct that 3 years is that window. So you're out of luck on the refund from 2011, I would guess. Sorry.
Yeah. Sorry, David. Well, why don't we talk about what happens when, for whatever reason, people can't file their income tax returns before this deadline this year of April 18th?
Right. You may not have to file, and you may be legally not obligated to file if your income and your age kind of your age is high enough or your income is low enough. You can hit certain metrics that says the IRS says you don't have to file. And the IRS has what's known as the Interactive Tax Assistant, the ITA at IRS.gov. We'll put a link up to that at our website, onyourmoney.com, later on today. But you can go through that and you answer a series of questions about your situation, and then they'll tell you based on your situation if you even have to file at all. But there are potential drawbacks to it, one of which is, as David mentioned, that you may lose a refund that you have coming to you.
You know, what if we have to file, but we can't get it done in time?
Yeah, many people can't. Keep in mind, if you call the IRS and you say, I can't file, what should I do? They appreciate the call. They like it when you work with them rather than just ignoring it completely. You might have some documents missing that you need. There could have been a change in your life circumstances. You know, many people have lost a spouse recently. They lost them during the tax year 2015, and they're not quite sure how to file and get the estate in there as well. So it's very common, and what people usually do is they file a six-month extension, and that gives you until October 15th of 2016 to file your 2015 tax returns. However, it does not allow you 6 months more to pay with no drawbacks.
What if we can't pay what we owe?
Yeah, it's not good if you can't pay what you owe, but it's not the end of the world. You should, if you can file and you can pay something, pay what you can right now. You know, if you have to pay, even if you have to use a credit card, it may be better to use a credit card to make the payment. Keep in mind, you're going to have a processing fee of about 2% or so. You're going to pay interest, and your credit score might be hurt a little bit, but it's probably cheaper to go that way than to not pay at all. If you haven't paid your entire bill due when you file, the IRS will figure that out. They'll say, in about 6 weeks or so, they'll say, send you a letter saying, hey, you owe, say, $5,000. You only paid $3,000. What's the deal? Well, then you can get on a payment plan. And again, you'll have a filing fee plus interest. And it's not going to be dramatic. Again, even if you owe something like $10,000, you might end up paying somewhere between $50 to $75 per month in interest and penalties at all. But if you don't file at all and you owe money, then the penalties get much more severe.
I'm Joy Cardine talking with financial planner Kevin McKinley during this edition of On Your Money. If you have a question for Kevin about any personal finance issue, tax-related or not, the number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Let's go back to the phones. Gary in Cambria is with us. Hi, Gary.
Hi, hello. My girlfriend has a little slight problem. She files her taxes, and they're already filed, and the person asked her if she wanted a short form or a long form. It didn't seem to make much difference, except that she he neglected to process the taxes, state taxes for her automobile, which is quite substantial on a $35,000 automobile for state taxes. Now, should she refile, or can she wait till next year to make the correction, or it's going to be a cost if she refiles, I imagine. And what process would she have to go through to claim that taxes?
Yeah, it depends. The cost won't be significant. You usually file an amended return, if I understand the situation correctly. You file an amended return to go back in and get. Do you know how much money she would be giving up by if she weren't able to take advantage of this credit, Gary?
I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, it won't be a significant cost, but there will be some cost to do it, whether she does it herself or refiles again. So that's one question to ask, is what she's giving up in benefits will be less than what it would cost in terms of time and energy to file an amended return. So I would go back and take a look at what she's going to gain from filing the amended return and then have that determine whether or not she does so.
Thanks, Gary, for the call. Deb in Plymouth is with us. Hello, Deb.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I love your advice.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Deb.
And hopefully you can help out with this. This is kind of a crazy situation. My dad left me $40,000 in trust for a children's education back in 1993. My husband and I were able to just leave that sit and pay for our children's education is what we decided to do, and it's grown to about $175,000. Well, this past year, with the mutual fund, people wanted their money, so they sold off a bunch of stocks and gave us a capital gain of $50,000, which, you know, it's just sitting there, and actually our value went down, but our shares went up.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we're waiting with bated breath to find out what our accountant's going to do with our taxes this year. We haven't gotten them back from her yet. But would like some advice, see if you have any suggestions for 2016. For, I mean, this kind of came out of the blue, and I didn't really know what to do about it.
Yeah, these are all really, I think you'd agree, Deb, these are good problems to have, right?
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
To have the money there is good. To have it grown as much, and then to have a capital gain distributed, is another good problem to have. But it's a problem, and especially when it's in a trust. Depending on the kind of trust, the tax rates on income and earnings distributed to a trust can be taxed at a much higher rate than if they were owned by an individual, and better off yet in a retirement account. Hey, is the lawyer who wrote the trust up still alive and working, or do you have to go to someone new to get some help with it?
I would have to go to someone new, I believe.
Okay, that's one thing I would suggest, because I'm hoping that there's some allowance in there, Deb, where if the kids didn't need it for education, that it would be eventually distributed to them at a certain age. Is there anything like that you know of?
There isn't.
Okay.
My other sister just got the cash, who didn't have kids.
Mm-hmm.
So we were planning on trying to use some of this money for, you know, a down payment on a house for our daughter, you know, possible future weddings and that
right.
kind of thing.
Yeah, I would try. Here's what I would try to do. I would look at the tax on the capital gains. You never know. It could be $10,000 or $20,000 or something like that, which again is a lot of money if it's lying on the floor. As part of the big picture, it's still a relatively small percentage of the overall assets of the trust. I would look to see what you can do to get it out of the trust and still adhere to the trust agreement. Does it have is there a bank serving as the trustee, or are you doing it yourselves?
I was made the trustee.
You were the trustee.
Okay. In charge.
Well, will anybody who will be upset if you do just take the money out and give it to your kids for the reasons you mentioned?
Nobody.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'd verify that with an attorney just to make sure, and it's going to cost you probably $500 to $1,000 with the attorney to verify that you can indeed go ahead and do that. But obviously, your dad. You said your dad left the money to you?
Yes.
Yeah. Your dad would be very proud, not only of the kids of going to school, but of you, that that you were able to come up with so much of it for their own education, not have to tap that. So I would try to get it out of there in whatever manner you can. And then you can, you know, give it to the kids directly, or you can do something where you say, we're going to put this in account in your name. We'd like you to only use it for these purposes, including, you know, paying for further schooling, down payment on a house, wedding. What I'd really like to see you do is get them to start contributing to their 401ks or 403bs at work, because that gives the tax benefit. If those kids put $10,000 of their income into a 401k in a given year, for example, they'll save anywhere from $1,000 to $4,000 in taxes for that year. And then you can say, okay, now we're going to give you another $10,000 because you did such a good job of saving that money into your pre-tax plan at work.
Thank you, Deb, for the call. Our best wishes to you and your family, too. We have an email from a listener who says, what should a person do if they are middle-aged and have no savings? How should they go about starting a plan for retirement?
Yeah, well, if you have no savings, that's okay. I think half of Americans right now have less than $5,000 saved for retirement right now. Now, again, part of that is because half of Americans are relatively young and haven't had a lot of time to accumulate a lot of retirement savings. But don't feel bad if you don't. It's good that you're asking and good that you're thinking about starting. I would go back to that Roth IRA. If you have earnings, you can put in up to $5,500 or your earnings, whichever is less. And if you're in the low tax bracket, it's nice because you don't get a tax break on the plan. But again, you can pull the contributions to a Roth IRA back out whenever you want with no taxes or penalties whatsoever. And so that gives you an opportunity to save for retirement, but not feel like, oh gosh, this money's gone for 20 years. And so if you need it in an emergency, it will be there. And depending on your income, again, you might qualify for the savers credit, which could be as much as, you know, a few hundred dollars or more if you max out the contribution. And you can open up a Roth IRA just about at any financial services company. You can go online to places like Vanguard or Schwab or Fidelity, or you can go into your local bank or credit union and open up one that usually they'll use like a certificate of deposit IRA, Roth IRA for you. They might also have an investment representative there who can hopefully help you as well.
I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley. Kevin is a financial planner, managing member of McKinley Money, LLC, and he is here to answer your personal finance questions. You can call us if you have one, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley, and we are talking taxes during part of the program. We have discussed some facts, tax facts and figures, and what to do if you can't file your income tax returns by this year's deadline of April 18th. Kevin, why don't we talk tax refunds now?
Yes, that's much more enjoyable topic for people rather than what they have to pay and when they have to file. A little bit of a misconception about the benefits of a tax refund. A lot of times people say, oh good, I got a refund, or I went to a tax preparer and she did my taxes and I had to pay in, so I'm going to go find one who gives me a refund. Usually you owe what you owe, and there are very few things you can do to reduce what you owe, but whether you pay it, you know, as you go and then end up paying in a little more and get a refund, or you don't pay in enough during the year and then you have to pay into it, it really doesn't matter. Most people can't do special things to get you a bigger refund. About 83% of tax filers do get some form of refund, and it looks like the average size of the federal income tax refund this year will be about $3,120, and it's nice for individuals to have that extra cash in their hand, but there is a way that everybody can benefit from it as well.
Yeah. Do you think it's better to get that tax refund or to hold off as long as possible to pay in?
It depends on your situation and really your personality. You know, sometimes that money could be better used elsewhere. Like, you know, you used to talk about, gosh, I got a big refund, and people say, oh, you gave an interest-free loan to the government.
Yeah.
Well, you probably couldn't have earned much on that money had you just put it in your savings account. Interest rates are so low right now that you didn't forego a whole lot of interest. Where it might have saved you money to use it in a different way is if, again, you would have made a pre-tax contribution to a retirement plan, or you had high interest debt like credit cards or a consumer loan that was over 6 to 8%, then you might have saved a little bit of interest by channeling that money to that debt or the retirement plan rather than to the government for it. But again, if you're going to redirect that money so that you have to pay in, first of all, you have to make sure you have the money when it comes due. Sometimes people spend it and they say, oh, shoot, I forgot I wasn't withholding as much, and so I owe money that I don't have now. Or if you owe too much, again, usually over $1,000 or so on the federal tax form, you may have to pay a small penalty, and you might have a future changes in your filing and withholding. For instance, you might have to start doing quarterly estimated taxes, which, again, you don't pay in any more overall than you would otherwise have to, but it can be a pain to do those quarterly estimates.
What is the best way to get a refund as quickly as possible?
Well, it's, of course, to file as soon as possible and double-check everything, make sure that it's accurate. And by using electronic filing, one of the biggest errors that people make when they are filing their tax returns is they don't do the math correctly, because they do it with a pencil and a calculator. And a nice thing about using software like TaxAct or TurboTax or H&R Block software, there's dozens of programs out there, they do the calculations for you, and they'll note if something doesn't add up, and they'll add it up for you and make sure that's correct. And you also want to get the check to be directly deposited into your bank account as well. And of course, if you have filed and you're wondering if and when you're going to get that money, you can go to irs.gov and click on the button that says, where's my refund? And they will be able to tell you where your refund is and about how soon you should get it. And we'll get a direct link up to that at our website, onyourmoney.com, later on today.
You said earlier, Kevin, that everybody benefits from taxpayers getting refunds. What did you mean by that?
Well, first of all, what it means is that the IRS gets the money that they have coming to them. You're more likely to be able to pay into it if you've paid in enough and then are getting some back for it, rather than waiting until the last minute and then paying some in. But many people spend those refunds. A website called GoBanking.com did a survey of 5,000 taxpayers who were getting refunds, and they said, what are you going to do with it? And about a quarter of them said, we're going to pay off debt. Another quarter said, we're going to put it in savings. Those are both great things to do. But 9% said they're going to take a vacation, and another 9% said they're going to make a major purchase. And retailers and people who set up vacations know that. And not only does that help the economy, but it also means that they lower prices around this time for everybody, whether you're paying for the service or the item with a tax refund or just your own money. It's a good time to shop for things that are larger ticket items, because so many retailers lower prices to try to get the business of people who are going to be spending their tax refunds.
Well, what are you going to do with your tax refund if you're getting one? Or what did you do with it? 1-800-642-1234. You can let us know, or you can ask a question of Kevin. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Back to the phones, and our next caller is Ben in Madison. Hello, Ben.
Yes. My question is, I have always heard you recommending 30-year mortgage payment. But in general, rule of thumb outside is 15 year or pay it as soon as possible kind of a thing. What was your rationale for recommending 30 year? I forgot.
Oh, okay. Well, good. I'm glad you checked back on that. I'm impressed to even remember the first time. So the question is I suggest usually a 30-year mortgage versus a 15-year mortgage. And the reason being is that, first of all, with a 30-year mortgage, your payment takes up a smaller portion of your monthly income. And therefore, it allows you to purchase a larger home if you can afford it, so you can get more bang for your buck. The other thing that I like about 30-year mortgages is generally they have no prepayment penalty. So you can always take out a 30-year mortgage and then make the payments that the 15-year mortgage would have required, the larger payments, if you can afford it, and if it's a good idea to do that. You can make those larger payments, and then you will still probably pay the 30-year mortgage off in usually about 15 and a half to 16 years. But if for whatever reason you decide that you don't want to pay it off, maybe interest rates go up and you say, oh, I can earn money on my money now because I can get more on it than I could have if I were to have had to send it to my 15-year mortgage payment, or your personal situation dictates that you don't have enough money to go and make that higher mortgage payment that the 15-year would have required, you get that flexibility to drop it back down. And again, for whatever reason, if you just say, you know what, this is crazy, I don't like these payments, and I have more than enough money to cover all my retirement, spending, future college needs, whatever, you can always pay that mortgage off again with little or no penalty. But it just gives you much more flexibility and freedom with a very little cost, just in the form of a slightly higher overall interest cost for the time that you have it.
Thank you, Ben. Let's go next to Lee in Williams Bay. Hello, Lee.
Hi, Joy. Hi, Kevin.
Hi.
I'm going to be starting to draw my Social Security in the month of May 2016, and I got a little flip from Social telling me I should, based on my income, take some money out of each check that they, you know, cut to me. Mm-hmm. And the percentages were 5%, 10%, 15%, and 25%. And I am on a fixed income. And, Kevin, what would you recommend, what percentage would you recommend I check so I don't owe money to IRS when tax time comes around in 2017?
Right. You want to get some money back, Lee, rather than have to pay in, correct?
That's right. I do not want to pay in. I'm on a fixed income, and it's a fairly tight budget.
Okay, yeah, but it'd also be nice to have that money there while every single month while you need it, right?
That's right.
Okay, I'd probably shoot for the 10% range based on just what little information you can talk about right here. The 10% one at a minimum, and 15% would be my guess is more than enough. In part because Social Security payments are actually tax free. In Social Security for retirement, what they do is the payment is tax free, and then they add up that half of that money into your other income, and then if that money goes over a certain threshold for people, then it becomes taxable, but only 85% of it is taxable. So I don't think you're going to owe a lot of taxes on it, if any at all, Lee. But if you just to be on the safe side, what I would recommend is that you go with the 10 to 15% options. And then if you find that you get a big refund, you could have used that money elsewhere, nothing else is changing your situation, you can go back in and say, you know what, let's withhold a little less because I could use that money on a month-to-month basis rather than waiting for a bigger refund on April 15th.
All right, Lee, thanks for the call. George in Laughlin? Are you in Laughlin, George?
Rockland.
Oh, I didn't think that sounded familiar, but go ahead, you're in Rockland.
Yes, I recently inherited an IRA, and the financial institution rolled it over into an IRA, and I wondered, when do I pay the capital gains on this?
I'm sorry, was it an inherited IRA, and they moved it into your own IRA?
Correct.
Okay. From whom did you inherit that IRA?
From my mother, and Wells Fargo rolled it over from an IRA into an IRA in my name.
Okay, I would double check on that, George, because usually you have to keep in that instance, you have to keep that money in an actual inherited IRA rather than rolling it over and mixing it into your own IRA. So check the classifications of it whatsoever. To answer your initial question, you only pay taxes on it when you pull the money out, and then it's taxed as ordinary income. And depending on your tax bracket, that's what you pay. Now, usually in an inherited IRA situation, there is a required minimum distribution that you have to take out every single year. Pull that money out according to the IRS calculations, and the financial institution should be able to make that calculation for you. Technically, you're responsible for making sure that not only that the RMD is made, but that the amount is correct. But you can ask the institution to say, hey, based on this situation, what do I have to take out? And they'll hopefully give you a calculation for it to let you know what you have to take out. Other than that, you can take out more than that if you want, obviously, but then it obviously boosts your income up, which then, of course, will boost your tax bill up, and then may raise the rate on which you will pay taxes on that distribution.
Thank you, George. Abraham in Delavan is with us now. Hi, Abraham.
Hello. I'm looking to find out if there are tax ramifications for my wife and I to give my daughter some land so that she can build a house on it.
Sure. Yeah, that's a very generous offer. Is it close to you by any chance?
It is very close to us.
Okay. That's a good indication of just how much she values that proximity, too, to say, well, if you'd like some free land, you're, for better or for worse, you're going to be living very close to us. Do you know the rough value of the land, Abraham?
$35,000 to $40,000.
Okay. What I would do is you can gift up to $14,000 per person per year to anyone you want to, with no gift tax ramifications and no income tax ramifications at all. So if it were worth $28,000, you and your wife could technically give her that land with no issues whatsoever. Because it's worth more than that, if you want to do it in the simplest way, you would just give it to her whenever you're ready to do it. And then you would file a gift tax return for that year, that tax year that you made it. Now, that doesn't mean you owe gift tax. It just means you're using up some of your lifetime exemption that currently is about $5.5 million that you can give during your life or at death above and beyond the $14,000 value. So it's, I think it's Form 709. So just make sure if you transfer it over to her that that you file that gift tax return with the taxes in the year. And then also write something in there that, you know, she has to come and get your mail while you're out of town or check on you. Otherwise, if she loses the land.
All right.
Thank you very much, Abraham. I like that. Karen in Franklin is with us now. Hello, Karen.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I hope that this is a simple one, I think. My daughter's a student at UW-Madison. She had a job last summer, had a little bit of state tax income taken off, nothing for federal. She wanted that refund back. It was less than $10. I had her fill out the federal form as well as the state. She's already received the refund. She only sent in the state forms. Should she have sent in the federal form as well? I just had her fill it out so that she'd have the right number to put on the state form.
I'm not sure on that based on the information that you gave me, Karen. I can't say, but I would have her, you can file that probably relatively quickly based on her situation. You might as well do it just to see if there's anything else she has coming back to her.
Yeah. Good luck, Karen. An email from Joe who says, I have two sources of income. I'm wondering if I can get a refund for Social Security payments that I overpaid last year. Do you know, Kevin?
Well, what happens is he would file his taxes, and then the IRS adds it all up and says, okay, here's what you owe and what was withheld, and they figure out the dollar amount at that time. There's nothing special for it at that particular time to say, oh, well, hey, this was Social Security income. The IRS already figures that into the calculation. I don't know which box it is, 8 or 9, A or B or whatever, on the 1040, but at that time, they'll take that Social Security figure, and they will already make that calculation on the taxation to determine if he should have had anything withheld from that or not.
All right, I guess let's try the website of the week now.
Oh, sure. Well, we've talked a lot about taxes here, and again, the IRS is really willing to help you. The IRS is not going to kick down your door and demand taxes from you, especially if you try to pay them on time and you pay what you owe. They are trying to help you. They just want to make sure that you pay only what you owe, but you do pay what you owe. And if you need extra help, go to irs.gov/help-and-resources. IRS.gov, help and resources, and all the calculators, the forms, all these questions that you have about your taxes right now are listed there, and the information is pretty good. It's not perfect, and the format is not perfect either. It is getting much better, though, and so you can go online to get those questions at irs.gov/help-and-resources, and we'll have a link to that website at our website, onyourmoney.com, later on today.
Yeah, and Kevin, are you going to be spending the week and the weekend fielding calls from your clients?
Yes, it's again, this is the life I've chosen. I'm a very fortunate person, but there is no rest for weary financial planners in the last week before taxes. So, we'll be back again on the next week with lots more information about things other than taxes, but that you've just very accurately articulated how my next week is going to be spent.
Good luck. And four more words before we go.
Spend less, have more.
Kevin McKinley, financial planner, managing member of McKinley Money LLC, with us every Tuesday at this time, or just about every Tuesday at this time, with information and advice on your money. We are broadcasting live on Tuesday mornings from 8 until 9. We are rebroadcast on Sunday mornings from 7 until 8 a.m. Thanks to Bill Martins and to Chris Molina and to Brianne Chasso and to Elizabeth Deliquest for producing this hour. Thank you for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.